Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform. I'm Justin Asiri, and each week I meet with military veterans to learn about their civilian career, what they do, how they got there, and advice for other veterans seeking to do the same. Today's episode number 294 with prisoner of war veteran Charlie Plum.
I established communication with another Navy pilot, and he told me to get over it. You know, I was complaining about the airplane and the president that started the war and the enemy that didn't conform to the Geneva Convention and all this stuff. And he said, hey, we're not victims here. You know, I'm looking around at my little 8-foot by 8-foot cell. I'm not a victim. He said, we're warriors and we're going to pursue this war till our last dying breath. So pull up your big boy pants. You know, we got work to do here. And that turned it around for me and for the other guys too.
There is so much to say about my conversation with Charlie, but I'll just say that I loved being able to talk with him and found myself partly taking notes for Beyond the Uniform and partly taking notes just for myself. As a prisoner of war, the lessons that Charlie shares in this episode are hard earned. We talk about mindset. We talk about finding your purpose. We talk about resilience and more. I left our conversation inspired and uplifted, and I hope that you do as well. As always, at beyonduniform.org, you'll find show notes with links to everything we discuss, including an interview that Charlie did with Jocko Willink that is one of Jocko's most popular episodes. I highly recommend that, as well as Charlie's book and autobiography that's in its 33rd year of reprint. Special thanks to all of you who have left positive reviews on iTunes. I wanted to call out J.M. Zane, who back in January wrote, a great forum for discussion of successful, high-performing, transitioning military members. Thank you, J.M. Zane, and all of you who have left positive reviews. So with that, let's dive in to my conversation with Charlie. Well, joining me today, normally in Westlake Village, California, but in his incredible airplane hangar that his wife built as a man cave for him in Santa Ynez, California, my guest is Charlie Plum. Charlie, welcome to Beyond the Uniform.
Hey, thank you, Justin. Great to be with you.
And for listeners, I want to give a background on Charlie. Normally, I keep this pretty short. I'm going to go a little bit longer, and I think you'll see why in just a second. But Charlie Plum is an author and motivational speaker. Just like me, he started out at the Naval Academy, but he served after that in the Navy for over 31 years. A pilot of the F-4 Phantom jet, Charlie flew 74 successful combat missions over North Vietnam and made over 100 carrier landings. On his 75th mission, just 5 days before the end of his tour, Charlie was shot down over Hanoi, taken prisoner, tortured, and spent the next 2,103 days in an 8-by-8-foot cell as a prisoner of war. During his nearly 6 years of captivity, Charlie distinguished himself as a pro in underground communications. He was a great inspiration to all the other prisoners of wars and served as chaplain for 2 years. Since his return home, Charlie has captivated more than 5,000 audiences in almost every industry around the world with stories that parallel his POW experience with the challenges of everyday life. Just two other pieces of context for listeners. John Fenzel from episode 199 recommended Charlie. And Charlie actually sits on the board, if you listen to episode 282 with Ken Falke and Leon Tackett of Boulder Crest Retreat for Military and Veteran Wellness, Charlie sits on the board of that organization as well. So a couple tie-ins here. So Charlie, before we dive in a little bit, if you were to bump into someone who's on active duty and they said, Charlie, what do you do for a living? How do you answer that question these days?
You know, that's a pretty good question, actually. Sometimes I really don't know how, because I do a lot of fun things. And my primary income comes from speaking and writing. So I am a motivational speaker. And so that's probably how I would answer the question. But it sort of depends on who's asking, because if it's the IRS, I'm retired. Or if I'm going to a foreign country, you know, I'm a retired carpenter. That's what.
That's awesome.
But no, that's what I do. I live life to the fullest. I fly airplanes and sail sailboats and ride mountain bikes and stuff like that.
I love it. You know, I was when you showed me you've got a couple planes in your hangar. I think my first thought was surprise that you're still flying, you're still active, and then you say mountain biking, and I think, man, you really are living life to the fullest. You're really still getting after it.
This man cave that I got is in Santa Ynez, California, and it's right across the hill from Santa Barbara. Well, the Reagan Ranch is up at Camino Cielo. It's right on the ridgeline between Santa Ynez and Santa Barbara. And so I ride my mountain bike up to the Reagan Ranch. It's about a 3,000 foot climb.
Oh my gosh!
takes a while. I'm not fast, okay. Mm-hmm. And I come home bloody sometimes, but it's fun.
That's incredible. Well, I am hoping to get to three things, and hoping to talk about mental attitude, hoping to talk about finding a purpose and resilience. But let's start with this first one. And one of the reasons why I was so excited, excited to have you on the show, but one of them is this is the 290-something episode, and a common theme that comes up is how much of one's transition from the military to a civilian career, as well as how much one's success in their civilian career. Yes, there's a component of skill set. Yes, there's a component of knowledge, but so much about it is around mental attitude, about mindset, and about psychology. And I know this is something that you are an expert in. And so I'm just curious what you would want listeners to know about their mental attitude.
Well, it's everything. It was the baseline of my survival in a prison camp for nearly 6 years. And now I think it's the very baseline of my enjoyment in life today and my productivity. I mean, it's everything. If you don't have to look very far to find people with negative mental attitudes, and even some successful people have negative attitudes, but they rarely enjoy their life. You know, they're not very happy people. So you make that choice. And I grew up I had a wonderful childhood. I was a rich kid, didn't have any money. I didn't have an indoor toilet till I was 7 years old. So we were very poor, but we were rich in unity and love. And I had a great mom and dad. And my dad taught me a lot about discipline. You know, he was the Greatest Generation guy. And my mom taught me a lot about forgiveness. And I would need both of those things in a prison camp. But they always were very positive about everything. My mom would say, son, every situation in life, there's good news and bad news. And the secret of life is the puzzle is to find the good news and act on that. And so in the prison camp, I found that for the first several months, you know, I just was very negative about my situation there. Was very angry, very bitter, just clawing the walls with the vitriol. And I found that, you can react to that situation in a negative manner. You can feel like you are on the defensive and that you are being put upon. But in reality, the way you respond to any situation in life, bad or good, your attitude really determines the outcome. And so, basically that's how I live my life.
I love that. And I'm a little bit floored as you say that, because I can think of the hardships I've faced in my life that I'm bitter about, and they're nowhere near the hardships that you faced in your life. And I love this perspective of being able to shift the way that you view this, that you have control of that. And I think that for me, a lot of the things that I feel bitter about, I feel like a victim. I feel like things were done to me. But when you're saying that, it makes it seem so much more proactive, where you have power, you have the control of how you internalize whatever is going on.
Absolutely. And one of the things in the prison camp that really, really helped me was the leadership that we found. I was really depressed, and of course physically I was in terrible shape. Every cell in my body hurt. I couldn't blink an eye, you know, without something hurting. And I wasn't eating much. Didn't have much water to drink. Bleeding from 4 open wounds. No medical care. And then I couldn't communicate with anybody. You know, we were all in solitary confinement cells at first. And then I established communication with another Navy pilot, and he told me to get over it. You know, I was complaining about the airplane and the president that started the war and the enemy that didn't conform to the Geneva Convention and all this stuff. And he said, "Hey, we're not victims here. You know, I'm looking around at my little 8-foot by 8-foot cell. I'm not a victim." He said, "We're warriors, and we're going to pursue this war till our last dying breath. So pull up your big boy pants. Mm. You know, we got work to do here." Mm. And that turned it around for me and for the other guys too. Now, you mentioned Ken Falke in Boulder Crest. And the XPOWs from Vietnam are pretty much the poster boys for what he's got going. He talked to you about post-traumatic growth. Mm. And we feel like that we, the XPOWs from Vietnam, made those choices because of the attitudes that we had toward the adversity. Mm. And we came out, you know, better off mentally and physically than if we hadn't been shot down. Clearly, 30% of all the combatants of Vietnam had PTSD. The prisoners of war, 4% of us had PTSD.
Wow.
Figure that out. And so what Boulder Crest does is it hones in on this whole idea that within any situation in life, you know, you have that choice. You can control your attitude. You can't control much that's around you. You can't control those guards, you know, that have the keys to your door, you know, or the guys that are slapping you around or tying you up. But you can control your response to that.
So, attitude and everything. Was there a turning point for you? I love this advice, this thought of like we are warriors and we're going to pursue that to our last dying breath. It sounds like that was the turning point for you, where you started to view this as like, okay, I will have agency over what I can control, which is just my attitude.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that pretty much was the turning point.
And I know that you speak in so many different industries. How do you relate this to them and what they're doing in their roles? Because they're not in an 8x8 cell. They're not deprived of medical attention and food and water. And yet they also have their own crises, their own crazy experiences of just this human experience. How do you make that parallel for them?
That's the whole point, is that I believe that you can be just as afraid. You can be just as depressed. You can be just have feelings of guilt if you're a single mother, you know, just lost her job, or if you're a guy that just got diagnosed with cancer, you know, or any downturn in life, in any having a car accident, you still have those same kinds of feelings of fear and feelings of inadequacy and feelings of failure. And so to me, you don't have to be in a prison camp, you know, to have those feelings. So you actually put yourself in a prison. You know, you put yourself in this. I mean, my cell was 8 feet, but we put ourselves in this little 8-inch prison, you know, of our mind. And I'm convinced that 8-inch prison can be more restrictive than my 8-foot prison cell was, just because of the way we react to the challenges that we face.
Mm. So if someone listening is, you know, a good portion of our audience is on active duty, a good portion is military veterans, maybe they're going through a divorce, maybe they're going through a change of jobs, maybe they're going through a difficult time with their family, How do they tactically do this? Like, what do they do to bring on this mindset? Because I completely agree with what you're saying. Like, our mind can put us in a prison that's just, that is torture, that is this, that, that it feels like that.
The first thing you have to convince yourself is that there's value here, right? It, when you go through a situation like you're talking about, and in the military, you go through these downturns where nothing seems to work, and you feel like there's no value in what it is that you're going through. And that's the way I felt at the prison camp. You know, how can this time in my life ever have any value? The best this time can ever be is a period of time I can forget. And I think we all do that. You know, when you go through a divorce or when you go through a trauma, or, you know, you didn't make the rank that you thought you were going to, you know, you got turned down, you were offended in some way, and you think this situation will never have any positive value. So the first thing you have to do is turn that around and say, well, there's got to be some, you know, there's got to be a pony in here somewhere. You know, you know, the old story about the kid that's shoveling manure so fast, there's got to be a pony in there somewhere with a pile this high. And I think that's what you have to convince yourself is, hey, Charlie Plum says there's value in adversity. All right. Now, here's the key. Find it, you know, go find it, you know, get off your couch and go find the value in whatever it is you're going through. And I am convinced that adversity is a horrible thing to waste. And you waste adversity, and you take these situations of life that have value, and you deny the value by blaming other people for your problems and feeling sorry for yourself and showering yourself with pity and denying that you have any control over your destiny. And so the first step, I think, in going through these things is to convince yourself that there's value in there somewhere. And, you know, just shovel that manure till you find it.
That's fantastic. I love that. For listeners that listen to the Saturday episodes that we do at Beyond the Uniform, I've been talking a lot about discomfort and how discomfort can be a really valuable tool in our lives, and how we often numb ourselves to discomfort, or to, as you're saying, Charlie, to adversity. And what I love about what you're saying is the, you know, finding that value. And I think that the part of that that I would want to point out for listeners too is there's so many ways with alcohol, with TV, with our phones, there's so many ways to temporarily escape that adversity. And what I hear from Charlie saying is like to feel the adversity, not run from it, and to actually, man, I picture you, Charlie, as this warrior, like just running headlong into that adversity, saying like, okay, let me get the value out of this. Let me not waste this. And I think that's, I saw that quote on your Skype, adversity is a horrible thing to waste. And I think that's so powerful. It is. It's not something to be avoided. It's something to try and squeeze the value out of it.
Absolutely. And, you know, I actually had an advantage in the prison camp because it was so evident, so upfront, so in my face. And I didn't have any technique, you know, of distraction from the adversity. Like you say, we go drink. You know, they didn't serve alcohol in the prison camps. Go to your phone, you know, or you go to your computer, or you escape this. And I think I had the advantage in the prison camp of having to face the adversity, and I couldn't get away from it.
That's incredible. I wanted to ask too, you know, you mentioned earlier that your mother modeled for you forgiveness. And, you know, we've all had people that we feel have wronged us. And when I put myself in your shoes, I don't know if I could get past that. These guards who are doing things to me, who are depriving me of my freedom, who are potentially abusing me. How did you approach the process of, maybe forgiveness is too much to ask. Maybe it's like not hating them. Like, how did you come to wherever you are with them?
It was difficult. One of the, I don't know, maybe I'd been there 2 or 3 months, and these guards prison guards, you know, are not the finest and the best. You know, they send their finest and their best to the front lines, and so these guards were idiots. I mean, and they were young. These were like teenage kids, and one of these teenagers came in, and of course they're very small people to begin with, and that. You know, that didn't help any of that. We were being held at bay by folks that were stronger and weaker than we were. And so this teenage kid brings his girlfriend to the prison camp to show her how tough he is. And so he comes in and she watches while he beats me up, you know, with his rifle butt. And I just added so much bitterness. Well, then the secret communication system we had, I go to the wall, which incidentally was one of Jim Stockdale's. Stockdale was, you know, our camp senior officer for a while, and you probably studied over in Luce Hall. Mm-hmm. Stockdale was the ethics center there is named after him, and a statue of Stockdale. Mm-hmm. When did you graduate?
2002.
He was there, in the Ethics Center, here's a statue. Mm. Well, he was the one that turned this thing around. He was the leadership there. So he's the one that told us, you know, hey, you're warriors, and you're not victims. And so he turned this thing around. But shortly after I had been beaten up by this kid in front of his girlfriend, came a quote. Our secret code, we passed around Bible verses and patriotic quotes and poetry and all this stuff. And this quote was especially meaningful to me. Here's the quote. Acid does more harm in the vessel it's stored than on the subject it's poured. Now, what that meant to me was, if I harbor all this hate and vitriol and bitterness in my body, it's not hurting the enemy. You know, in fact, it's helping the enemy. You know, it's killing me.
Yep.
So I thought to myself, you know, I don't think I'm going to die here. But if I do, they're going to have to work for it. I'm not going to kill myself with all this bitterness. Mm. So that was another point, another turning point for me. And Stockdale's his motto was return with honor. Well, you've heard that before. In fact, I think it's above gate one there when you go out of town at Annapolis. Return with honor. And in fact, we just commissioned a destroyer, the USS Stockdale, and that's their motto, return with honor. And so that sort of set the tone for how we were going to live our lives and how we were going to act. Mm.
It's so powerful. I think of that quote, I'll butcher it, but it's like resentment is like taking a poison pill and expecting the other person to die.
Yeah, and exactly.
I love this thought of just, again, you're being proactive in not letting the circumstances or the resentment ruin your life and really having agency in how you're acting. Mm-hmm. What about a big thing I wanted to ask you about is finding one's purpose. And so many of our guests and listeners, they, you know, the ones who are on active duty, they have a strong sense of purpose in the military, and they're going to eventually transition out, and they want to find what to do with their life. And then we have listeners who've been out for 10 years and are trying to figure out, like, what is my deeper purpose? What am I on this earth to do? And I'm wondering what advice you have about uncovering. I always picture like an archaeologist scratching away at the dinosaur bones, like how to uncover what their purpose might be.
That's a very good question. And when people ask me why the high suicide rate in veterans, that's the single word that I come up with is that when you got that uniform on, you have a purpose. You know, if you don't know your purpose, you know, ask your drill instructor; he'll tell you. there's never a moment in that uniform that you don't know exactly what your job is and what you're supposed to do. And up two, three, four, you got a purpose. You take that uniform off, and suddenly you've lost that purpose. You know, it's like when you're born. You know, you spend 9 months, you know, floating around under your waterbed and suddenly you're born and the doctor pulls you out of there and cuts the umbilical cord. And a lot of people run around trying to find some place to plug that thing back in. you need a purpose. You need a personal life. Okay, but to your question, okay, how do you find the purpose? Well, you don't really have to look very far. You can find it in a job, that's for sure, and most people do. They identify themselves by who they are and what they do. But you can also find it, I think, in philanthropy. I think that you can find purpose in being an assistant scoutmaster, you know, mm-hmm. in a Boy Scout troop. I think you can find purpose in feeding the homeless one day a week. You can find purpose in your religion, you know, mm-hmm. in your church or your synagogue. You can find purpose in politics, but get involved, you know, get off the couch and go do something mm-hmm. with your life. And it's amazing. There's so many things that people can do out there mm-hmm. With their lives if they, you know, turn the TV off and walk away from their computer and go get involved somewhere to do something. The job, I think, that's the way most of us, I think, identify ourselves. And like you said, if sit down on an airplane next to somebody, and that's the first thing you ask is, hey, what do you do for a living? Mm. But there's an awful lot more besides, I think, employment to give you purpose in life.
I love that expanding out, because I think that people really put high expectations on their job. It's going to pay my bills. It's going to give me my community. It's going to give me my purpose and identity. And I love that you're pointing out that there are many things that can give you that purpose. It could be volunteering, it could be philanthropy, it could be your religion or church or whatever it is. And so don't just myopically focus on your job as having to be that purpose and having to be that source of daily inspiration for you.
I think that's true.
What about I wanted to ask about resilience, because in the 290 plus episodes I've done, everyone faces setbacks in their career. Everyone faces these hurdles. I know we've kind of spoken to this a little bit already, but what other thoughts do you have for people about building up resilience and that tenacity?
Well, obviously it's a personality thing, and some people are stronger than others physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually. And I think that, you know, you sort of start out with the baseline and a belief of yourself and belief in your support group, your family or your team or whatever you're involved in. And so the resilience comes, I believe, when you have that confidence, you know, that belief that, hey, something good is happening here. And again, you know, find it, pick it out. Mm-hmm. But resilience, if you dwell on the negative things of life, we're back to the attitude now, if you dwell on a negative, it's tough to be resilient mm-hmm. when you're blaming everybody else for the problems and feeling sorry for yourself.
I love that. Yeah, it all comes back to just mindset and to attitude. You know, one thing I was thinking of is, were you married while you were a prisoner of war?
I married my high school sweetheart the day after I graduated from the Naval Academy, and she hung on for 5.5 years and filed for divorce 3 months before I came home. Mm. So after that terrible experience of the POW situation, I came back and found that I had to start my life again. I'd spent a lot of time in the prison camp, you know, thinking of her and dreaming of her and planning the rest of our lives together. I had a 20-year plan, and the plan started the day I was repatriated, of course. And I would sit on my board bed and just, you know, mentally transfer myself to that first day I'd be home. And then I planned the next 20 years around here, and I had 20 years of her birthdays. I knew every present, the ribbon, the wrapping, all this stuff. I had 20 years of Christmases. I knew every ornament and every tree for 20. I had meals. Mm. I'd figured out 3 meals a day for 20 years. Mm. I had cheeseburgers and chocolate malts. I had no rice. but of course, when I came home, then she was gone, and she was engaged to this other guy. And I'll never forget laying in the hospital bed at Great Lakes Naval Station, where I was being debriefed and reconditioned. And laying in that bed in a fetal position, thinking to myself, you know, what can be worse than this? This event will never have any value. Woe is me. And then that didn't last very long, you know, because wait a minute. I have just overcome, you know, probably one of the biggest challenges I will ever face. And if Mom's words are right, if there really is good news and bad news to every situation in life, then all I got to do is figure it out, you know, solve the puzzle, choose the good part of this. And so, you know, and I thought back again to the first several months in the prison camp, where I was so angry at about everything and was unable to forgive. And so right then and there, in that hospital room, I decided, nope, there's something good's going to come from this, and I got to figure out what it is. Well, she remarried, and the guy she was engaged to, and they're living happily ever after. And I have a wonderful wife who built me a man cave in my airplane hangar, and we have 4 kids and 3 grandkids. So you know, life is good.
Mm. It's man, that's so powerful. I was going to ask about kind of the reintegration with family. I didn't know that about your past, and that's just very powerful. And it's almost seems like the first real world test of this mindset you developed in Vietnam is like you come back and you're given this major curveball of 20 years of envisioned future that's out the window. And then you have to, in outside of those gates, you have to take this same mindset and choose to find that positive puzzle piece.
You know, I never thought of it that way, but you're right. I may have to use that in some of my speeches, is that, you know, after the military challenge, then I had the civilian challenge, the real world challenge that lots of people go through.
Mm.
And so, but I had, you know, I had the training. Mm. I've been to school on adversity.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew that there could be value in it, just depending on how I approached it and my attitude toward it.
Wow. You know what I respect or am encouraged by from that too is I think maybe the story I was telling myself is you had this experience as a prisoner of war, you have this flip switched in your head and you're permanently different and then everything is easy. And what I think I appreciate about hearing that is it's almost like, yes, you learned this, and yes, it is something you have to proactively apply whenever you face adversity. Like you're still having to choose to find that positive puzzle piece every time. It's not like a once and done. This is a mindset that you continuously choose to integrate into your life. And for some reason that's more approachable for me. It's not like a once and done. It's like, no, this is a muscle that you build and exercise and choose to exercise every time.
That's very perceptive, because you know it's almost a daily thing. You know, I mean, on a daily basis, you see disappointments. You know, you see upturns and downturns and little wrinkles in the plan of life.
Mm.
And so, I mean, you're right. You validate the philosophy every time you make that choice. Every time you decide to smile instead of frown or laugh instead of cry, you're validating your philosophy in life and almost re-energizing, you know, your ability to be resilient.
Mm. Are there things that you do on a weekly basis or daily basis to kind of build up this wellspring and to kind of build up and reaffirm this practice?
I don't know. You know, I'm a Christian and I pray a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I read a lot or listen to podcasts a lot. And you know, I try to fill my mind with positive nutrition.
Mm.
You know, I don't deal in a lot of negative things. And so I don't, I mean, I don't think I intentionally build this attitude myself, but it, you know, it just comes naturally. I don't know how I could ever live life with a negative attitude. It just doesn't fit.
That's great. And I love that. And I think that for listeners, those are all, you know, I would probably point out for listeners that, this crucible experience that Charlie went through, like he has been, I imagine he built these up over time. So it's natural now but for those of you where it's not as natural, prayer, reading, podcasts, like anything that is that positive nutrition, as you said, I love that, is just a way to start to build this up so that it can become second nature.
Absolutely. And, I try to put myself in the position of your listeners that are listening to this. And I'm certain that there are a lot of people that are kind of down on their luck, you know, or they didn't get the promotion or whatever. And it's a bunch of pie in the sky, Charlie, you know, this is, I mean, easy for you to say. And, or maybe they think that it's fake, but I guarantee you, there's nothing fake about my life. I'm very transparent. And sure, I have setbacks. You know, I have things that don't work. I've got airplanes that have mechanical problems that I try to solve. You know, it's normal life to have all these situations involved. But oh, by the way, it's also normal life to keep the positive attitude and be healthy.
That's so beautiful. I always like to ask guests about resources. And by that, I mean books or podcasts, movies, conferences, anything that's kind of helped you in your personal, professional life that you would pass on to listeners. And I want to kind of jump the first one that I'll add to the show notes, which is Charlie has an autobiography. It's called I'm No Hero. It is currently in its 33rd printing, which is phenomenal. So I'm going to add that in the show notes and encourage listeners to check that out. Charlie, what other resources would you recommend for listeners?
Well, again, Christianity. I read the Bible. I try to talk to other people about the positive parts of life. Let's see, Jocko Willink is a buddy of mine. He has a great podcast. You know Jocko?
Oh,
you know,
my God. Hold on. I know that listeners can't see this, but I've read and talked about extensively on the show his book,
Extreme Ownership.
Extreme Ownership. And then along with Steve Bain, who helps me out with the show, Discipline Equals Freedom Field Manual is fantastic. Right. And then I'm about to read Dichotomy of Leadership. But I'm very excited to hear wherever you're going to go with this, because I think he's got a fantastic message.
He's a crazy guy. And I've gotten to know him. In fact, I've done two of his podcasts.
Oh, my God.
And he went through my book, I'm No Hero, and 3 hour and 17 minute podcast on my book. And it is one of his most popular podcasts. I think it's number two or number three in all of the podcasts he's done. And I get orders for my book. I made the mistake. Well, it wasn't a mistake, but I said on this podcast that any book that's ordered from my website, I autograph. And that podcast was like 2 years ago. I still get orders from all over the world. Mm-hmm. I mean, his audience is incredible. And so I get orders for my book from, you know, Japan and Australia and all over the world.
That's incredible. I will find the podcast for listeners. I'll add that in the show notes at beyondtheuniform.org so you can listen to that. That sounds incredible.
Yeah, number 76 is the one I did by myself. The second podcast is I did with a friend of mine who is a World War II fighter pilot and was shot down but escaped. And this guy, Jim Kunkel, is just one class guy. He's 97 years old. He still flies. In fact, I'm in my hangar. His hangar is two hangars down from mine, and we'll probably go flying this afternoon. But anyway, that's the second podcast that we did, just because I turned Jocko on to this guy, Jim Kunkel. But okay, back to, you know, things that I look at things that, that hold me. Any of those books that Jocko wrote that you recommended or listened to this podcast. For those of you who don't know Jocko, every morning he tweets a picture of his watch when he gets up, okay? And it's like 3:45 a.m. And then he sends you pictures of all the sweat, you know, under under the barbell machine and all this stuff. Well, I can't keep up with that. But, and you know, it's kind of crazy guy. But he's neat. And, and I've gotten to know him. And so that's one of the other references I would make.
That's great. Well, I know that we only have a couple minutes left here, but I always like to leave the last question open-ended. And you can interpret that either as what have we not covered that you want listeners to know, or what are just some final words of wisdom that you want to leave with our listeners?
You know, I'm really a simple guy. And I try to live my life really simply. I don't try to get really complicated about a lot of stuff. And I think the thing that I would try to drill into people's head is that you have the choice. It's up to you. And in our culture today, there's so many people, I mean, the government, the schools, everything tries to prop us up, you know, tries to, when they don't keep score with the soccer games for our kids, they give everybody a trophy, you know, and you can't fail. And I'm convinced that one of the secrets of life is knowing that you can fail and then take a personal responsibility that you're going to make it. And if you can, you know, if you can grasp that whole idea and then just do something, you know, just get off your couch and go make something happen. It changes your life when you can do that.
Mm. Well, Charlie, it is so inspirational to have you on the show and to see not just what you learned in your experience, but how you're still applying that to your life. And I appreciate the work that you do to help and support the military community, not least of which is your involvement with the Boulder Crest Retreat, which I'll add a link to that in the show notes for listeners, as well as a link to the podcast where Ken and I talk in great detail about that.
Absolutely. Real pleasure.
Surface, surface, surface.
Thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Quick couple admin points. We release brand new episodes every single Monday and Thursday. Those are usually recorded about a month or so before they go live. Every Monday and Thursday, we have an interview, usually almost always with a military veteran about their civilian career. More and more, we're starting to add in experts who may not be veterans, but may have some expertise that will help the military veteran community. Saturdays, I typically post more of a behind the scenes episode, which is a free form format. I try to use what I'm calling a mullet format. And by that, I mean business up front, party in the back, talking through admin points, professional topics related to the podcast. It might be a conversation I had that week. It might have been an interview I had that week, but just trying to share things that are top of mind that may help you in more of a free form, straight from the heart format. And then the party in the back is the personal side of things, just kind of more free-flowing thoughts on life, on improving oneself, just kind of whatever's going on in life and trying to be authentic and honest about those things as well. Special thanks. We have an all-volunteer army of people behind Beyond the Uniform making this possible. We do this on our lunch breaks, on our evenings, on our weekends, because we love the military community. We want to give back. We want to make a difference. We want that as part of the purpose in our life that we valued in the military. So special thanks to Steve Bain. Steve does pretty much everything. He helps secure guests. He does our newsletter. He keeps the reels rolling and keeps me sane. Kathleen Dillon, the first person to join our team. She writes text transcripts of every single episode. It's wild. She keeps up with two of these a week despite a demanding career and education right now. But those transcripts help us get more SEO value, helps her audience more. Andrew Woolridge is our data guru. He helps us understand the numbers, which is the easiest way for us to figure out how we can better support you, and adds kind of the data oversight for that. Rick Healy does all of our social media. He is gaining more and more of an audience for us by getting our videos, getting our podcasts out on social channels. The best way to stay in contact with us is if you go to beyondtheinformed.org, there is a newsletter. You'll have a little pop-up that comes up. You can put your email in. We email twice per month. We try to be respectful, but it is a great way to get appraised of upcoming events, upcoming interviews, promos where companies are giving discounts to Beyond the Uniform listeners, and more. This does cost money to put on. We are committed to not charging veterans directly, and the way that we kind of offset costs is through corporate sponsors. So if you know of a company that would like to get in front of a military audience and their families, that's one way that we can both add value to our members but also offset the costs of Beyond the Uniform and give us a little bit of budget to start expanding what we're doing. So that's the best way you can help us. If that's not something that you can do, a positive review on iTunes is greatly appreciated. Have a wonderful week. We will be back Monday, Thursday, and Saturday with more interviews. And keep up the listening. Take care.